If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. So our seminars each week are primarily designed to gradually lead you into the new paradigm consciousness. And part of that involves a radical shift of our inner awareness and how we have projected ourselves into time and space, and thus become entrapped here, or seemingly so. So every one of our seminars is for the purpose of untying those knots that have entrapped and kept us confined in lower states of awareness, consciousness, and manifestation, so that indeed an entirely new world can be birthed from within our own inner consciousness for our own experience. So tonight, our seminar topic is, what is the world? And what is my place in it? So let's take a deep breath and call yourself forward as a divine individuality. A uniquely designed individual manifestation of God. And you're wearing in time and space a temporary persona that you have identified with as yourself. But beyond that is a self completely apart from and completely untouched by the world that you're currently seeing and believing to be the real world. Last week we spoke about what is the real world and how do you enter it. So today we're going to look at the world as we think it is, as we believe it is, as it seems to appear to us when we open our eyes each morning. Did you ever take an eagle's flight in your imagination over the earth itself and just kind of give an overview look at all of the 7.5 billion beings on this planet and what they're doing at any given time? If you haven't, let's take a little overview flight now, if you'd like. So, before we do that, why don't you ask for whatever you need to see, realize, hear, and have tea with in tonight's seminar, so that only that which is for your highest advancement in spiritual strengthening comes forward into your awareness tonight. And ask also that anything that can be lifted through grace or made better or somehow clarified or your way somehow made straighter and more clear to you, whatever it is you need, take this opportunity to just make that your intention. So that as we have these times together, you're very much on purpose and participating, not just listening to someone speak, but taking this as a meditational journey, an insightful journey, in which you work within the fabric of your own particular consciousness to evoke greater understanding and to expand your awareness. So again, taking a deep breath, ride that breath all the way up through the top of your head, and imagine that you're just sitting. Now, you can sit on a flying carpet if you like, or you can even take the form of an eagle if you would prefer that, or just simply soul flight. And come way above the earth to a place where you can get a sense in your inner vision of all the different people, all different countries and ages, different languages and customs, different costumes, different lifestyles. Some of them are dwelling in the jungles. They've, in many cases, never been exposed to, for example, Los Angeles or New York or Paris or Istanbul or any place other than the jungle. What kind of a world do you think they live in? What would they do if suddenly they were picked up and dropped in the middle of rush day traffic in Los Angeles, or the middle of Times Square just before the New Year's ball drops? What would they think? What would they imagine? What would some extraterrestrial from another world experience if suddenly they beamed down? Well, we had a little idea of that with Captain Kirk in Star Trek years ago. But really, think about it. We take for granted sometimes that the whole world and everybody in it sees the same world, but they don't. Each person sees their own version of the world, birthed out of their own associations, attachments, experiences, and the labeling and interpretation they've made of all of that. Imagine the masters who are now externalizing into the outer world, many of whom have lived in ashrams in the Himalayan vastness or in the various high desert plateaus of the world. What are they experiencing as they're coming out? It was said that the Master Moria, when he came down from his abode in the high Himalayan plateaus, that he became ill and had to be carried back to Shambhala, where he was put in sacred repose to regenerate and restore his body. Just coming down into the valleys, which in India have a very high vibration compared to the West, yet he couldn't take even that lowering of his vibration. What kind of a world does an ascended master see from that higher state of illumined awareness? Would you ever wonder? Have you ever looked through the eyes of your ascended master self? Yes, there's a part of you that is an ascended master already. Earth is in a time lag. The blessings already are. Everything that you ever have aspired to be, you already are, beyond the limitations of time. You're simply realizing that you can move your spiritual inner awareness to any place. And if you move it with enough intention and intensity, and you're willing to let go of your attachment to what you think you know, you can secure yourself at a higher level. It's always a letting go of the familiar and the known and the accustomed and the things that we're attached to embrace of something much greater. Now look at the things that people are doing. Some people are plotting criminal activities. Their hearts are full of hatred and fear. There are other people who live truly heavenly lives that are in higher states of consciousness, that participate in spiritual activities with other lovers of the Lord. They're singing and dancing and praying and meditating together. And they're forming communities where they grow food and raise happy children. And some people are plotting wars and ways to devise greater killing machines to destroy life and ruin the beauty of the earth. At the same time, there are other great beings that are actually planning how to feed the whole world and end the poverty and the starvation that now prevails. There are great scientists in their laboratories right now seeking to find the secret that will cause us to be able to live longer, disease-free lives. Now, we've all been given basically the same template. So what makes the difference? Why do some people create worlds of such ugliness and destruction, and others such beauty and creative inventiveness? It is strange, is it not? So out of God, out of the consciousness that we call the generator of all things have emerged as codes of sound that then become densified into light, that then become articulated as living fire, which then precipitate as solidified form. And everything is made of the warp and woof of love, created out of love, created by love, created for love, created for the purpose of expressing, in this particular universe, divine love and wisdom. And God loves all of its creation. And since nothing departs or leaves the mind of the one that is generating that thought, we are ideas, divine thoughts, forever one with God, forever safe with God, forever intrinsically one with the all that is that we call God. And in highest truth, we've never been here at all. But for a dream of separation. So that very first manifestation from that unified state that we might call an extension of consciousness or a ray of light produces what is called an individualized sense of self, which many people call the soul. The Bible calls it the uniquely begotten Son of God, or the Word made manifest and incarnate. But that's every single person. And then, from that individualized purity, which has as soul self-awareness, self-determination, and freedom of choice. But the thing that the soul does not have at that point is experience. The soul in its purity lacks experience in being differentiated And so the all that is became the many to increase the awareness of itself as being differentiated. And so that differentiation, or those souls, developed a separate mental and emotional nature to enable it to interpret differentiation in time and space as it appropriated human form. And the very name defines its purpose. The human, hu is an ancient word for God. Man comes from manasa, or manas, which means the one who can think and know God. The one who can become the homo sapien. The one who truly can know itself. And that is something very, very precious. In fact, you possess something that is unique and so precious that only you have it, and it's yours forever, and will be with you forever. Can you guess what it is? Are you stumped? Okay, I'll help you along here. It is yourself with a capital S. No, not your human self with all of its flaws. I'm speaking of your cosmic, unique individuality with a capital I. The human being tends to want to imitate and emulate other people when it's in its limited state. But the more the consciousness develops into its own self-identity, its own uniqueness, as a divine being, the more it integrates those higher principles that we call the monad, or the I Am presence, and the soul, or the Christ consciousness, the more those are integrated, and the more the patterning of the high self begins to govern the human personality in time and space, the more unique that person becomes. You step out of the herd consciousness, the mass consciousness, the sheeple consciousness, and you become a one of. And that's the divine plan. Now, for a while, the ego pretends to be the one of. And that's the counterfeit. That's the human being trying to make itself special out of its own biofield of energy and power and manipulation and control. And so there's a stage of the, let's say, unfoldment of consciousness in which that seems to govern the human being. But after a while, that true individuality, that true soul, that true Christ presence begins to appropriate and take charge more and more of the human personality. And you have at that point a real serious wake-up call, or I like to call them a pattern interrupt. And this is something that completely turns your life upside down and very often wrests from your hands and your life everything that has been familiar to you heretofore. And a lot of people are going through that today. A lot of people are losing their outer moorings and the things that have defined them as, let's say, ego-defined human beings. Because we're at the time when we're going through a graduation into something much greater. We're going from the human ego-based personality into a totally soul-infused person. And we're starting to move more and more into what we call the cosmic divine individuality, which eventually will birth us forth as something beyond the human entirely, beyond the superhuman, even beyond the level that we accord to masters. We have an open-ended unfoldment here. So, let me ask you, have you ever devoted any time to contemplating who you are as a unique divine individuality? You know, beyond the form you see in the mirror, beyond your current personality, name, conditioning, and assumed labels, beyond your previous appearances in time and space, beyond time, beyond concepts, beyond thought, beyond that seeking, comparing, rationalizing mind. Have you ever had a sense of who you are, divested of all that? Probably not, for the simple reason that who you think you are, even spiritually, is entirely something you've constructed out of thought, out of what you've heard, read, been taught, or imagined. That's true of just about all of us. It takes a serious pattern interrupt to get us to go beyond the known. So actually that is good news, because who you are as a unique divine cosmic individual is safe. That's the good news. You're safe. You can't mess with that part of yourself. It cannot be affected by anything that your human personality thinks, imagines, does, or believes. That is what's so amazing. You can have all of these experiences, and if you can train yourself to go through them without buying into them and identifying with them, you literally could walk through this life without accruing any karma. That would be called a jivan mukta, or soul that's free, even though they're still in the human form. It takes a lot of experience, I think, many times around the block to get to the point where you can do that. But some of you are at that point, and this would be your next step. Can you do the dance without buying into the fact of being a dancer? Can you just dance like Shiva without attachment to the form? That's what Sai Baba told me to do. Do the dance. Do the cosmic dance. So here's the amazing thing. You remain eternally as God created you. Eternally pure, perfect, divine, regardless of what you imagine that you did in this dream, you imagine to be your real life and human personality. You could have been the most horrific criminal, and if you didn't attach to that label, well, actually, you wouldn't be in any form of criminal activity if you had any degree of awakening. But hypothetically, if you didn't buy into being the doer, you would not reap the results of your action. So, a better example is this. Your shadow may be cast upon all sorts of terrain, both pleasant and foul. But has that affected you at all? Have you been polluted, or for that matter, enhanced by what your shadow has encountered? That is such a good metaphor for your personality in time and space, which is like a shadow of your divine, eternal individuality, that greater you that just kind of watches everything from a distance with amusement. So think about it, if you wish. Contemplate this as a meditation, if you want to. for it's so profound that it can cause spontaneous self-realization to occur. If you are really intent upon awakening, your personality in this world is exactly like a shadow cast upon the fabric of time and space, but not affecting your unique individuality at all. Okay, what causes me to seem to be affected, to seem to be hurt, sullied, and to rise and fall depending on what's happening? The only thing that is causing you to experience being affected by anything in this world is your thinking and believing that you are. Yeah. You're affected only to the degree that you believe you are. And this is something that I find fascinating as a statement from Jesus in the Course in Miracles. You alone give the only meaning anything has for you. You alone give the only meaning anything has for you. Wow. So you label it, you define it, and whatever it is to you, thus it will be. It will actually seem to be that for you, according to what you have called it to be. And that's why you only have karma with yourself. For you alone judge your actions. It's what's so interesting. People think that God is going to judge them. But the God that's going to judge them is the I Am Presence, is that unique individuality, that cosmic being that you are, that divine being, is going to ask you how you did, how you fared with your life. Do you know that you cannot even die until it's your time? Until you give permission? And at the very last moment, very often, you're asked, would you like to go on or would you like to return? Because you always have a choice. In fact, some people want to go beyond. But that higher part of you can see very clearly that you have unfinished business to do and that there's a part of you that is attached. Someone that you love, that you really deep down inside don't want to leave at this time. And so you're sent back. So you're here in this dream for as long as you want to be. For your own purposes, to work out your own agendas, and to decide for yourself how well you did or didn't do according to how you see it. So thus you seem to reap the effects of your actions if you believe you're the doer. You become responsible for your creations until you become God-realized and realize that you of yourself do nothing. It is that which is greater than you that sources through you and does all things. And you begin to live that nishkama karma, that desireless action. You become that manifestation in the world, and you no longer accrue karma. Or as I often say, you go from the law of karma and you learn how to live in that place called the single eye of Christ consciousness or soul awareness. That's when your whole body is filled with light and you're living above the karmas of the worlds and the lower dimensions. You're focused in that tisratil, that divine Christ center in the center of your head, back behind your forehead. So when you're attached to your actions, those effects of those actions become attached to you because you can't separate the action and the reaction. Cause and effect are one and the same. To give is to receive. So as long as you believe you're the giver of the action, then you also are responsible to reap the effects of that action. Until, like I said, you realize of yourself, you do nothing. You simply are a conduit for the divine. So your attachment, mentally and emotionally, to what you believe is going on in your life is what is keeping you here in your current situation and your current state of consciousness. To shift your state, you must shift your current familiar way of relating. You have to have something that is that pattern interrupt to get you out and beyond that familiar place where we all kind of like to hunker down because it's known, it's comfortable, it's predictable, and it doesn't really demand very much of us. That's why the people who really go for it in this lifetime are called spiritual warriors. You know, they walk the world in with a much different purpose. And you can tell because they don't want to be comfortable. They don't want to follow the herd. They don't want to imitate someone else. They don't want to follow someone else. They want to be their unique individuality. And they're not afraid to risk, as I like to say, jump in the mouth of the bear. So you believe there's an outer world out there that can affect you, that can cause you to succeed or fail, ascend or fall. And it is all, every bit of it, only in your mind. There is no world apart from your mind. For example, where does the world go? Where is it when you sleep? Or transcend the thought process in deep meditation. You have left one world and entered another. You've exchanged one dream landscape for that of another. Daydreams, night dreams, both are only conditioned states of mind. The Vedic teachings state that there are three primary states of consciousness that govern the human experience. There is waking, dream, sleep, and deep sleep. And deep sleep is often likened to merging in divine bliss. However, unconsciousness is not bliss. So there's a higher state called Turiya. And there, the divine beingness, individuality, shines in its own state that is none of the aforementioned states. It is not the waking of the worldly carnal state, the carnal mind. It is not the dreaming state of sleeping, nor is it the unconscious state of deep sleep. It is total awareness. I have experienced and lived with and been with for many years the divine avatar Satya Sai Baba, who exists in that state and has been able to function very effectively in the world, but doesn't identify with the world. He's perhaps the first full manifestation of a totally God-realized person that has modeled that state in the ordinary world without having to be a monk or a renunciate or doing advanced spiritual practice. In fact, he's never done any spiritual practice at all in this lifetime. He came in that state. And has been, all the years that he was in the physical form, manifesting that for all of us to see, telling us that everything he did or didn't do, everything he said or didn't say, everything that he did was to be taken as his upadesh, his divine impartation and teaching. To see me, he said, is initiation. And to do what I say, that is mantra. So the moment that you come into his presence, whether it's in the physical, in the dream state, or in a vision, they're all equally the same, all of your sins are forgiven. That's what he says. And you literally are given a totally new life, which if you just follow and obey those teachings as best you can, you will have, if not God realization in this life, you will have it very soon, because grace will begin to advance you very rapidly. In fact, some people live more than one lifetime after they've come to Baba. Baba gives you very long lifetimes. Sometimes people have lived to be 116 years old, like Elsie Cowan. In fact, Baba said that she was actually older than that, but she fibbed a little about her age, which I think is funny. But be that as it may, he gives you the opportunity to have a long life so that you can get all of that unfinished business wound up, all those karmic rice kernels, you know, cooked in your pot. You can get it all finished. And then if it's your time, you can make this your last incarnation and be God realized. That's the gift of the avatar. So those souls that are ripe and fruits on the tree of life, they're often granted that great blessing. So Sai Baba is one who exists as a divine cosmic individuality in that state of divine Venus, B-E-N-E-S-S, Venus. That's a state that's beyond awareness such as we know it, or consciousness such as we know it. So the world, he says, arises only in our mind and disappears as we transcend the mind. So the mind that he's referring to is a bundle of attachments and associations that we've identified with. Baba says that the mind is made of the warp and woof of desires and attachments. And it's that bundle of desires and attachments that projects the world we see. So the world only appears when we turn our thoughts and attention to it. And it vanishes whenever we transcend our focus upon it and our thoughts. We think about the world, and our thoughts and beliefs about what we've associated with as the world. And that worldview begins to fill our minds, and thus we see through that point of view the world that's familiar to our bundle of desires and attachments. And this is what causes us to feel concern and worry and fear, so forth. Because now we're caught up in the labyrinth of the mind. When you're caught up in the labyrinth of the thinking mind, you lose that peace. And you've lost awareness. You've lost awareness of the divine peace and love that is the all that is, just above that level of the thinking mind. So you can learn to stop the world and get off, so to speak, by becoming, well, by learning to transcend the thinking process through active meditation, which is also called soul transcendence or awareness expansion. So you don't try to stop the thinking process itself. because that part of the mind that thinks is designed to think and designed to operate within the dream. It's designed to make sense of the illusion so that you can be within the illusion long enough to get the experience and the educational value and whatever it is that's caused you to come here in the human form in the first place. So you have to give the job, the mind, a job. And the job you accord the mind is to chant your initiatory tone, if you're an initiate of one of the travelers, John Roger, like I am, or the mantra that's given to you at the time you're initiated by your teacher, your guru, whatever. Or if you don't have any of those things, then you replace the thinking process with a mantra or with a divine phrase or affirmation that works for you, that gives your mind something to do while you, as a soul, slip past it. You slip past it. You transcend in your higher awareness beyond that thinking mind. You just rise like a helium balloon above the kerfluffle in those lower levels. And the mind chants. And you don't pay attention to the thoughts that arise. After probably about 10, 15 minutes, you lose interest in watching the mind anyway, and you're already beyond it. So it's really a very simple process. So then you transcend in your inner soul awareness to that still place that's beyond thinking. And during your day, you start out your day by offering yourself as a vehicle through which the divine can operate. You become an instrument through which the divine love and wisdom of the higher part of yourself can operate and function. And as a personal self, you simply take the witness or objective observer position. And you watch the events of your life. You interact as appropriate according to your dharma. And you stay in that state that Eckhart Tolle has described, the presence. In other words, you stay present here and now as the presence of awareness. That means you watch things without judging and critiquing, without having to get involved unless it's your dharma to do so. When is it your dharma? When it is in front of your nose and there's nobody else around that is supposed to be handling it but you. You decide your dharma. It's the things that you feel that you have to do. But then ask yourself, do I really have to do that? Where did I get this impression? Because sometimes people think they have to run other people's lives, and all they're doing is getting involved in another's karma drama and wasting the opportunity of dealing with their own life. So it's not hard to stay in the objective observer if you realize there's very little you have to do here but to watch where you put your feet, watch where you put your mind, watch what you're putting out with your mouth, watch your character and your behavior, watch your heart, pay attention, and give it your best shot. Stay as conscious as you can, as integrated as you can, and do your very best for God. And offer the fruits to God. Don't take the glory for yourself, because if you do, you get the karma. So you have to be smart in walking as a Jivan Mukta, as a free soul, and not, you know, creating more karma dramas for you to come back and have to deal with in another time. This is a time to step free. So where is the world? Where does it go? When you're in love and gazing into the eyes of your beloved. There's no world, right? Or making passionate love to that beloved. Where's the world then? more deeply absorbed in the beauty of, say, a captivating sunset. You know, that stillness that falls upon the earth just at the conjunction of nighttime and day. It's like the pause between the breath. It's like that hush in which you can slip into infinity beyond the mind, into the bliss of God. That's when the mind is naturally stilled by nature itself. And likewise, where is the world when you're fully involved in reading a good book or movie, watching a really good movie, or dancing or singing or acting or painting or playing a musical instrument or a video game or sports? Whenever you do any of those activities, you forget all about the world. In fact, the first state that you go into before you become a real mystic is usually the artistic creative consciousness. It's a step towards becoming a mystic, where you live in that state that's got the eyes beyond the phenomenal into the higher realms. So you see how the world, the outer gerbil cage of events that are given life for you only by the news anchor, you see how it has disappeared? Now, if no one ever told you that a world existed, and you grew up, say, in a jungle all alone, what kind of a world do you think you'd live in then? So, we have very much adopted and imitated the worldview of our prevailing time and culture. And so that forms itself a national, international, global, like karmic barrier that together groups of us are addressing in our given localities, wherever we may be living. So we are each given the opportunity at this time to awaken fully. It's called accepting the spiritual promise. And when you are invited to go beyond the world and make this your last obligatory incarnation, you better go for it. It can come in many forms and many guises. It could be somebody asking you if you've been born again, if you'd like to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. It could be the blue light of the Mahanta coming to you. It could be the purple light or rose of the mystical traveler. It could be the golden light of the Christ himself. It can come to you in many ways, but when that spiritual promise comes, or it could be Sai Baba appearing in a dream. But whenever the light giver and the way shower appears to you, regardless of the form, and you're invited to go beyond, for heaven's sakes, have the wit to say yes and partake. How do you partake? You get involved in that, whatever that is. If it has an outer form, you get involved with that. You begin to eat of the angel's food of the higher consciousness and nourish your spirit. So some of you ask, well, aren't I responsible for making this world a better place? And let me ask you this, has any human being ever, at any time, made this world a better place? I mean, look at history. That will answer that question for you. Well, what about my mission? Your mission, should you care to accept it, is to awaken from the dream and manifest your true, divine, cosmic individuality. And when you awaken, the world ends for you. For you are now living in God consciousness. as a divine being rather than as an ego personality trying to redecorate and improve the prison system. That's what it is to try to fix this world. There's nothing wrong with the world. It's the mind that projects it that has to be addressed. So the world exists only in your mind. And you are in the world only to the degree that you see the world as a means of fulfilling your desires. Desires are the emotional hooks that bind you to this world. So the world is present for you as long as you believe it has anything of value to offer you. And you will create that world that seems to portray these values and seems to fulfill your desires as long as you allow desires to control you. So the world arises only within your mind, and it is held intact only by your desires and attachments to it. What if you awakened and with a happy laugh realized that you've only dreamed the whole thing? All of the war and pain and devastation and misery was just a bad dream. Every single God-realized avatar, master, sage, and rishi has assured us that that is exactly what will happen. So you have a real life at a higher level of awareness that your belief in this level of existence is hiding, and your attachment to the belief that there is an outer world apart from your thoughts, apart from your beliefs, is what is holding you earthbound, in the world and of the world, or worldly-minded. So when we, quote, become spiritual, we so often simply project another fantasy world within the same world, where we see one world as spiritual and the other world as mundane. Or one as awakened and the other as asleep. But in truth, both worldviews are asleep. And neither really exists apart from the mind that thinks and believes and imagines that they are. And both versions of the world, even your spiritual, which the Course in Miracles calls a happy dream, even that will vanish when you transcend the personal ego mind. So how can you do that? Well, number one, stop buying into everything your senses are telling you is real. Cease listening to every thought that rolls through your head and acting upon every impulse. Start to observe your thoughts without identifying with their content or acting or reacting. Simply observe them. Be still and serene, just like you're watching a parade passing by. Let the thoughts and impressions go by without grabbing, without holding on, without critiquing, without judging. Just watch the suckers. You know, let it go and simply be. You know, like Mother Mary in that song, speaking words of wisdom. Let it be, let it be. Let it be. Let things just pass through you and around you and over you and under you. Then start to realize that your world and how you see things is unique to you and shared only with Divine Spirit. That Divine Spirit is you, is your authentic self. It is your divine individuality. It is your guru. It is your nearest and dearest friend. It is your beloved, your ever-present guide, teacher, and comforter, your safe space, your refuge. And that divine spirit that is the true self that you are is pure love. And that love can take any form to manifest and interact with you personally. In fact, your devotion and your preference is what causes that formless love to appear to you in the form you most trust and adore. So here is a wonderful exercise to practice. You can, if you'd like, wherever you are, wherever space you happen to be, imagine the beloved in the form that you most adore, the beloved Lord, not a human being, the Lord. Imagine the Lord standing right there beside you. And see the beloved in your mind's eye, sitting on your sofa, or on the seat next to you in the car, or going with you, walking with you, sitting, talking with you, having dinner with you, wherever you are as you go about your day. Take the hand of the Lord the first thing in the morning and ask that beloved one to walk with you throughout the day and show you things that you didn't even imagine were there. Ask that beloved one to show you how to see through the eyes of your unique individuality, and that that mind that was in Christ Jesus could be your mind, that you could see things through the eyes of divine love. And just imagine that sweet companionship wherever you are. I got up the other night and was sitting on a chair, and all of a sudden I was absolutely engulfed with the presence of the beloved. It overwhelmed me with sweetness and brought tears to my eyes. So, out of God comes all things. Nothing leaves God's presence that God has given birth to. And so, God is love. And all that was created by God is created out of love, for love, by love, and for the purpose of extending love. The first manifestation of God's love was to create the one as the many, and out of the many to create a unique individuality, which is you. And your place in the cosmos is to manifest your particular unique divinity. That is the path of soul transcendence. You do not go into an amorphous mass. The spirit that you merge with is the Holy Spirit, or the spirit of your own wholeness and holiness. You never cease to be, but you go from glory to glory, revelation to revelation, and ever greater manifestations of the unique divinity and cosmic individuality that is you, as a very, very unique, uniquely begotten emanation of God. So let's take a deep breath and go out chanting, Anai Hu. Deep breath. Been listening to Ashtar Athena Charon, also called Commander Lady Athena. And this has been Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs, offered as the voice of the Ashtar Command. God bless you. I love you. The peace of God be with you. Adonai.